wonderful. Our first call from the Netherlands, and we've had some emails from the Netherlands in the past, but that's the first call from the Netherlands. A remarkable, remarkable caller. Lucy, you seem to have made dear friends all over the planet.
They've found me. I've just been amazed. Well, that's thanks to Google, I guess.
Yeah. Speaking of Google, I'm going to bring up your real estate business site, which is lucyimhome.com, which is just fabulous. And I noticed that on your real estate, on the site that you sell real estate in San Diego, that you include in your bio information about the Silver Convention and about your singing past. How many of your clients know you or recognize you and are just jaw-dropped because they read that on your site?
Surprisingly few. They go to my site and they look for houses.
Oh, that's a shame.
Even notice. But, I just decided to put it on there because most real estate agents didn't grow up wanting to be real estate agents. They always started out with another career. That's less true now, I think, but certainly with my age and a little bit younger, we were always doing something else before, and we never... You don't find that out about people, and so that's why I put at the top we could have something in common, because all the different places you've lived or the hobbies that you have and things you've done in your life as careers or part-time jobs, and I always think, well, I could start up some sort of connection, but surprisingly few people pick up on it.
That's interesting, and San Diego is a boom real estate market. I assume that things are as complicated there now as with the rest of the country regarding real estate and financing.
Very much so. And in fact, I think California is leading the nation in foreclosures.
Oh, my.
That has become the market, foreclosures and short sales. It's not fun.
Well, Strictly Confidential only wishes you the ones that actually can be financed come your way. So just... Yeah, good feeling toward you. I want speaking of the site and the fact that you talk about yourself on the site, you also mentioned Fly Robin Fly on the site, and we've mentioned it earlier in the show. Now, Glenn has just emailed us a copy of Fly Robin Fly, so I'd like to go ahead and run that because it's been one of the topics this evening and certainly one of the absolute classics that you were involved in. And this is from the Save Me album, isn't that right?
Yes, from the same one as the other Silver Convention that you just played, yeah.
Okay. Save Me and Fly Robin Fly. Our producer mentions that he was a boy when Fly Robin Fly, he remembers it well. In fact, he's named his son Robin. One wonders if he did that. One never knows around here. Bob, if you'd run the Fly Robin Fly track for us, please, sir.
Okay.
Fly, Robin, fly.
absolutely wonderful classics. And it's a great example of what you were talking about earlier with the violins inserted there.
Yes.
Yeah, and that did become quite the standard, the soaring violins and the sweet string sound. And it's interesting that it debuted. I had no idea that's when that began.
Yeah, yeah. But just from his classical background, it was just so innovative.
Were you actually in the studio with the violinists?
No, we weren't. We came in. Most of that stuff was already on the track.
I see.
Actually, I'm not sure if the violin was there, but everything else was.
Can't Lucy, remember. Tell us about Harry Thuman. Now he did a disco classic called Underwater, and that was on an LP called American Express back in 79, and Kangaroo, which is Bahamas project. You worked with Harry Thuman. How did that? We have one of the tracks too. Tell us about that.
Harry was a brilliant sound engineer, and he lived out in the country outside of Munich, and he had this large house and a new house, and he built this fabulous recording studio there. It was a little inconvenient because you had to have a car to get there, and most of us in Munich didn't have cars. We took public transportation and rode our bicycles, and so I remember I bought, I'm getting ahead of myself, Harry made this fabulous studio, and he attracted a lot of people to his studio, including La Bionda brothers from Italy. Baby Records did a lot of their productions there, and I think even the Rolling Stones came down at once and used his studio. But more than that, he was just a very innovative engineer. And so he called me in to work on these projects, and I wrote lyrics for all of that Underwater LP, and then one after that, Bahamas, forget even now what they were all called, but and he would just come up with a lyric line. He'd say, I want this one to be called American Express, and then I would write lyrics on it, and or I want this one to be about Christine, and so I'd write the lyrics, and Hermann Weindorf helped him compose the music, and Harry sang, like Underwater doesn't have any lyrics, it doesn't have any vocals on it, it's purely instrumental and studio effects, and that gives you a real good idea of what he could do in the studio. And I remember there was one track that called Submarine on one of those LPs, and he created an audio illusion of a submarine by doing a short echo left to right, giving it a metallic kind of clang, and doing a long echo front to back, so you felt like you were in a metal tube. It was quite innovative, and that's the kind of music that it really helps to be listening to in surround sound and good acoustics.
Ah, yes. Those were back in the days of quadraphonic. We call it surround sound now, but back in the day it was called quadraphonic.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, we have a track.
It's something, and I was just going to say, because he lived out in the country, and because I had to be out there just about every day because I was working on these projects with him, I bought my first car in Munich, and I bought this little VW Bug, and I used one, and I would putter out to the country to go to the studio every day.
How sweet is that? A kid from Cleveland buys a Volkswagen Beetle to go out to a recording studio. Who could put it together, a story like this? It's really quite remarkable. We do have the track. It's a medley, actually. D.D. Sound and Harry Thuman. It's a medley. You wrote the lyrics for both of these. Tell us about these.
Well, now this is why I'm at Glenn's house. I said to Glenn, I don't want them to call me at my house because I'm not going to remember everything, and Glenn has all the vinyl for all of these things. So
yes, I've
looking
seen a photograph.
Here.
It's a huge wall.
Now, you're talking about not the Underwater one, but another one?
It's referred to...
You're referring to
referred
what?
To, it's referred to on the track listing as D.D. Sound Harry Thuman Medley.
Oh, the medley. Now, see, D.D. Sound, I wrote for Italian disco. I wrote 1, 2, 3, 4, Give Me Some More, but that's not what you're talking about, is it?
It came in today, and I didn't have a chance to listen to this one, so I don't know what to expect. Yeah. We can find out together, though.
We should find out.
We should find out.
Help me. No, Dee Dee Found, I wrote a disco for Italians, and they said to me, and this that this didn't have to do with Harry Tumon. This is for just for Dee Dee Found. And for Dee Dee Found, I wrote, they said, write a lyric for us that the Italians can sing along with while they're on the dance floor, even if they don't speak English.
So, priceless.
So I wrote, 1, 2, 3, 4, give me some more. I know I need your loving, baby, not four more. Yeah, oh, okay. See, Glenn just came in and he said it is two separate albums. I thought you were talking about one and the same. But,
I
was writing
together.
For Italian Disco, and they were recording in Harry's studio. And so Harry did all the engineering on that. And then the American Express and Harry Tumon, that was his own project at that same studio, but which he released at Baby Records, which was the Italian record company. So
I see. Let's have a sample of this, and we'll all understand it better in just a few minutes. And Bob, the track is Dee Dee Sound, and I believe you have it loaded. Roll.
Yes, sir.
Well, then, Lucy, it in fact was 1, 2, 3, 4, give me some more.
Yes, I understand now. You threw me for a loop. What happened was Glenn put together a medley of two songs, and the only relationship between those two songs is the fact that I wrote lyrics for both of them, and Harry Tuman was the engineer on both of those. But in fact, the first one was sung by the Italian brothers, La Bionda, and it was made for Italian disco. And the second part was Harry Tuman's own production, where he's singing, but mainly he's a sound engineer. That's his forte. But I did write lyrics for both of those, and they were recorded in the same studio. But Glenn had linked it together to make it easy, and I just didn't get it.
I see. It stumped me too for a while. I'm glad we figured that out. I have to say, the first track, the combination, was that a harmonica and violin together? That's a totally new sound. Was that something that was just, recall having heard?
It was just what I would call goofy. And if you are familiar with the record cover, which you're probably not, but it was a pretty goofy cover, too. Yeah, they were just, and when La Bionda, when the brothers performed on television, They were wearing bowler hats and crazy. They were just kind of wild and crazy guys. That was their image.
I see. And they were French, were they?
No, they're from Rome. They're Italian.
They're from Rome. They're Italian.
And to this day, I will walk into an Italian restaurant and some waitress will say she's from Italy, and I'll say, "Oh, I wrote a song for Italian disco way back when," and I'll say it was called 1, 2, 3, 4, give me some more, and she'll start singing it. And so it had that effect on people, because even if they didn't speak English, they could sing that 1, 2, 3, 4, give me some more while they were dancing.
Yeah, that's when it becomes part of the public consciousness that, you succeeded when something becomes that ingrained. I think it's wonderful. Tell us about working with Donna Summer on Once Upon a Time. Now, that was part of the Fairy Tale High. There was a, if I'm not mistaken, that Once Upon a Time by Donna Summer. You worked with her on that.
It was the second LP, and it was a double LP. And it was, I'm thinking Fairy Tale High. It had one of my favorite tunes off of this double LP is Rumor Has It.
Yes.
Rumor Has It. And Once Upon a Time, and then she did another one with the Four Seasons, but Fairy Tale High, that's not ringing a bell.
It was probably part of a medley I heard somewhere. It may be from an entirely different.
Yeah. Anyway, it's just the same gals, Gita and myself and Betsy and Roberta just singing back up. But at this point, Donna had already had a hit with Lumpy Lumpy Baby. And then right after this LP, she actually moved to L.A. for good with Casablanca and started producing over there.
Well, moving on to a slightly different subject, Lucia, I want to ask you about Best Friends Sanctuary and your work there, and it looks like a wonderful place that in the San Diego Humane Society, is that?
Yes, actually, Best Friends is in Utah, and it's a fabulous, fabulous animal sanctuary, and they're very well funded. They have 33,000 acres right in next to Zion, and so that the terrain is just gorgeous, all of this beautiful red rock, and just like the park there. And they do amazing work. If you go onto their website, bestfriends.org, they have a fantastic website with a lot of interesting stories. And they take animals from all over, and they also rescue people who can't manage their own shelters or little, you know, small-town humane societies. And they adopt those animals. They take in... they will bust people who are hoarders, you know, keeping 800 cats on a property, and they will take all the animals and rehabilitate them. Absolutely no kill. Their goal is to get things adopted, but if they can't, they live out their days at Best Friends, and they go to at great lengths to rehabilitate them. They have swimming pools, hydrotherapy. They will make carts for animal dogs who can't use their back legs, for instance, or they make prosthesis for a horse recently. Had an artificial leg on a horse. And
wow.
I met several horses there that were older than 35 years old, 35, 41 years old, living in these gorgeous canyon lands. They have pot-bellied pigs. They have elderly donkeys and lots of young animals, too. And then in their cat facilities, they have... They have the area for feline leukemia cats, and they have another area with cats with diabetes, and they have an area with lots of cats who have some sort of either injuries or they were born not able to use the hind quarters. They call that the incontinental suite, and that's where all those cats are.
Bless their hearts.
They also went over to, they rescued Hurricane Katrina, of course. I've walked dogs that were rescued from Hurricane Katrina. And they also went over to Lebanon when Beirut was bombed. And they brought 300 dogs and cats back from Lebanon who were trying to be cared for by two young gals who have the only humane society in all of Lebanon and greatly underfunded and all that. So Best Friends just flew over there and brought back 300 animals and helped them out. It's just an awesome place. And so I've been there twice. Each time I've gone for a week at a time with my oldest sister, who's also an animal nut like I am. And we volunteer. We walk dogs. We groom cats, clean cages, go out on a pickup truck and feed various horses and donkeys in a series of canyon pastures. It's an awesome place.
It really sounds like such a wonderful refuge. It's so no animal is put down there, whether they're adopted or not. They live there, live out their days there.
Right, and they get any medical treatment that they need.
Wow.
They require. It's outstanding. It's just so awesome. Bestfriends.org. And then here, I'm not, before I was working with the Humane Society and their event planning, but recently, in the last 2 months, I've been working for Project Wildlife here in San Diego, and that I volunteer on Fridays for 5 hours, and they take in wildlife, mostly birds and small animals like raccoons and bats, and squirrels, and possums, and they rehabilitate and release back in the wild. Now, they do have to put some animals down because they can't release any animal back into the wild who isn't 100% fit. Otherwise, he will be instant bait. So, but they have a very, very humane way of euthanizing. But my job there primarily is feeding baby birds, and we're just winding down the baby season, but I go in there and I feed all these little gaping mouths and have to learn about the different birds and how their digestive systems vary from a finch to a mockingbird to a jay, and they have a medical team who will examine injured animals that come in, and birds, they bring in a lot of hawks and seagulls with broken wings, and SeaWorld is always dropping off things that people have found and left there. It's lots of fun also.
Wonderful story. Wonderful story. I noticed also that they encourage the volunteers over at bestfriends.org. They encourage the volunteers to take dogs for outings and overnight trips. I think that's fabulous. It's like doggies night out.
It is, and I did that. I had a motel room in the town just 5 miles away, Kanab, Utah, on the southern border. And we would take dogs, and they'd get to sleep over in our motel room, and you take them for walks or long walks in the canyons, and that is part of their trying to rehabilitate them for and socialize them for so that they will be more adoptable. And when we bring them back from an overnight or a day's outing, we fill out an evaluation sheet and how did they do, and did they run into any other animals, and how did they react, and how were they around people? You know, did they dislike men with hats or whatever their particular phobia happens to be, and we fill out an evaluation to make them more adoptable, and for best friends to be able to get them to the right people. It's fabulous. Well, you must have looked at their website. It's just out over the top, isn't it?
I did. I looked at it, and it is absolutely beautiful. If you folks would like to have a look at it, it's bestfriends.org, and I can't imagine a better place for animals. And we've said on this show and other shows in this network, Lucy, that you can judge a person's character by the way they treat animals, and I wanted to bring that out about you.
Thank you.
We have a question from the chat room. We want you to tell us about Lady Bump.
Oh, well, this Lady Bump is Penny McLean, and it was during the same production, actually, that we were doing Silver Convention, and the same studio group and musicians also did this single for Penny McLean. And while she was singing, they also needed a little speaking part, which they asked me to do because I was the English-speaking person of the background group. And so in the beginning, I say something like, let's see. I think I say, "Hi, I was just itching to dance. I'm so glad you came in here tonight. Counting on dancing with you," something like that. I say on there.
Oh, my stars, you're the one that does that.
Yes, and then, of course, we sang all the background vocals. And Geeta Walter, is the one who does the famous scream on Lady Bump. And I'm not going to try to imitate it. Those who know the song know what I mean.
Now, does Geeta, I think I'm pronouncing it correctly, does she have another name, a stage name? I was confused by what I read.
She did a single and an LP under the name of Jackie Robinson, not to be confused with the baseball player.
I see. So we might do some searches on Jackie Robinson then to find some of the old music that she did. Interesting.
Yeah,
what country was she from? That's an unusual name.
Glad you asked. She grew up in East Germany. And when she was 14 years old, she was singing. She got a fantastic voice, and she was singing with big bands in halls and then also in some clubs. But she was too young to be in those clubs, and so they dragged her out of there, and so she decided to go visit the West, and when she was 16, she came over to West Germany, and at the time, because East Germany was communist, they had to have a sponsor in the West, and they didn't let you take money with you, and you had to know who you were going to see. They wanted to make sure you had family left behind so that you wouldn't defect. Well, Geeta did, in fact, defect. She just chose not to come back. She was having a great time. She was singing in Stuttgart, and she was working in a butcher shop, which didn't last but a heartbeat because she was terrible at that. But anyway, so she got started in her singing career in West Germany. Then, of course, she couldn't go back because she was a defector, and her mother was still in East Germany. And finally, when her mother turned 60 years old, she was permitted to leave the country, and again, without any money, just to visit Gita. And her mother was, because at that point they think, well, if they defect, they're no longer useful for the workforce, so they don't mind losing them. So her mom came to visit her in Munich and watched a show or two of ours, and but was a little overwhelmed at that time, at age 60, having never seen an escalator before in her life, and lots of traffic and everything. So she did go back home. And Gita used to tell me that they never had any trash in the East, because anything that they were done with was either pig fodder, compost, fuel for the wood fire, the wood-burning stove, or if it was plastic, which was rare, like a plastic bag was rare at the time, was of course saved to be reused. They had no waste and no garbage pickup. Didn't need it.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
It's humbling to hear the background and how what people went through who sang this music. It really is an amazing story, very humbling. I didn't get a chance to hear all of the music that was sent today, but I did get a chance to hear some of it. One of the songs that I was bowled over by and had not heard before was one of your tracks when you were with the Hornets called You've Got a Right, and would you introduce that for us?
Oh, yes. We were singing with the Hornets, and the Hornets had become quite successful, too. We did a lot of television. In fact, we represented Germany in the Grand Prix Eurovision. So our producer, Ralph Siegel, at the time, we wanted to do something a little more contemporary, and because on stage we were doing all these oldies, and then we were also doing sort of German pop music. Well, we wanted to do something a little hipper. And so our producers contacted Bruce Chanel. And if you remember Bruce, he's the guy who wrote, "Hey, hey, baby, I want to know, will you be my girl?" Remember?
Wonderful.
And I think he was living in Nashville at the time. And so they sent him some recordings of our voices, some of the cuts of our music. And he wrote this song for us, You've Got a Right to Love Somebody. And in this song, I'm singing in the beginning. I have the low voice, and then Gita kicks in with her fabulous high voice on the second half.
Well, we have an email that arrived from our friend Larry Sanders, who's a first-generation DJ from, he played at Fire Island and a number of other places. He would like me to ask you about a track by Jackie Robinson called Moving Like a Superstar, and he points out that the 7-inch 45 RPM got disco play at some of the New York clubs.
It did?
Yes. Yes, Larry knows his stuff, so I'm sure it did.
Oh, well, I can't tell you much about it, except that was a single of hers, and she sings it very well. She's just got a kick-butt voice, and that one, too. She just sang the heck out of that. And on that same LP was another song called Get Up Jones, and she did a version of Sympathy for the Devil also on that LP. And this was a little more rockier music than she was singing with us and other groups. But yeah, Moving Like a Superstar. I didn't realize that it got play in the States at all.
Well, apparently it did, and you have to be pretty devoted to run it as a 45. That was back in the day.
Yeah, I will let her know, because she'll be happy to hear that. She's inherited her mother's house in this small town where she grew up, and she now lives in the former East Germany.
Interesting. Well, we should run the track. We went off in a different direction for a moment, but I wanted to run the track You've Got a Right, because it is an absolutely wonderful track. I really enjoyed it today, and Glenn has done an edit for us. And if you'd run that, Bob, it's called You've Got a Right when she was with the Hornets.
Sit there crying, open up and let your heart in the skin. You got a right to love somebody.
Lucy, I have to say to you that that is very likely my new favorite song.
Oh.
Wow. It's just wonderful.
I don't
know.
You wrote it just for us. It was fun.
It was, it's fabulous. I don't know where I was when that song came out. It's new to me, and I just think it's absolutely fabulous. It ranks right up there with some of my all-time favorites.
I don't even know if it's on an airplay in the States. Quite possible that they were just playing it in Germany. It was a single release, and we did television shows with it in Cologne and Dusseldorf and places like that. But I was so oblivious to what was being played in the States of all the music that I was involved in at the time. It just never occurred to me that any of it was being played in the States, and maybe this wasn't, for all I know.
The energy of that particular song reminds me very much of the energy of some of the songs from Flashdance. Actually, it's that wonderful, wonderful song.
You're welcome, and thank you for playing it. And when you mentioned Flashdance, that reminds me that Flashdance was written by Keith Forsey, who was the drummer on many of these productions that we've been talking about, and he was also the drummer on a thing that I think Glenn sent you that I wrote on my own that has nothing to do with any of these groups called Pool Hall Blues. But Keith Forsey went over to, he was English, but he was working in the Munich scene, and he went to L.A. about the same time Donna did, and he wrote Flashdance.
Wow. Well, you certainly put a new song in my heart. What a wonderful song. But, you know, I'll go on all night saying that unless I move along. Let's talk about a 33-second track that Glenn sent along. You did a commercial. And we have the audio from that commercial. Tell us about that, please.
Well, that's another thing that we were doing in the studio scene in Munich. The American companies were coming over to make their commercials in Munich because they didn't have to pay residuals like they did here. So they would come over, and they would give us our $45 a track, and we would we would play them and walk away happy, and they would get away cheap. And so we did Wrigley's commercials and different things. And this particular one is just me singing, and it was for Nivea. And it was a television commercial, and you just see a lady and her leg. You don't see all of her, but you see her leg up on the edge of a bathtub, and she's putting cream on her legs. And then in the little break, the instrumental break, you hear, of course, some guy's voice is coming over and talking about soft skin or whatever he does. But it's a Nivea commercial.
Amazing. And this was done in a studio in Germany. Is that right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Bob, roll that. It's a 33-second commercial. We're going to run this one for free. Roll it, Bob.
From your fingers to your toes, you've got one set of feminine clothes, and with a little daycare,
I'd rush out and buy some. Buy it by the case. You know, our producer in production chat pointed out, by the way, that the song that we ran, You've Got a Right, would be a wonderful anthem song for the nationwide group Marriage Equality. I think he's got a great idea. I think we ought to send that along to them.
You've got a right to love somebody. Oh, you're so right.
Yes, Bob put things together really better than... Okay, I'll have to contact them tomorrow and drop them a note. I think it would be wonderful. We have that's a 3:31 clip, or rather 3:24 clip. There's a longer version. I'm sure Glenn will send it right along. Tell us about Pool Hall Blues, please.
Well, and I just sent this to Glenn. I dropped it off today because he hadn't heard some of the Hornet stuff, and so I just threw on a little song that I had written on my own, and it was never recorded as a single or on an LP, but this is a demo of it. I wrote it in my living room, and even though I used to play guitar a lot, as soon as I got into the music business, I would write songs on guitar, and then I would invite my ever so talented musician friends over to my living room for as much beer as they wanted to drink, and they would put these amazing tracks down on my little Revox reel-to-reel two-track tape where you bounce one track off the other until at the end you've got...
This was a great recording.
And a horrible sound because everything is doubled. But anyway, so that's how I initially recorded it. But then I went into the studio and recorded it with Mike Thatcher on piano and Keith Forsey on drums, Nick Woodland on guitar, a lot of these same... Giuseppe Solera, saxophone solo, a lot of the same people that you recognize on all the LPs that we've been talking about. And I wrote the lyrics and the music, and I sang all the vocals on this particular demo. And I'm happy to say that we are now doing this song with my new group, Moxie, and my good buddy Nancy plays a killer guitar solo for us with Moxie, so it's really fun to relive this song. And I wrote it about Pool Hall Blues because I really do like to play pool. And the song is about how, even though my parents paid for good education, here I am in the pool hall shooting.
Amazing. So you're a pool-playing, disco-singing, Broadway show-acting, commercial-singing disco diva. What a character you are. Bob, we have time. We're in the closing minutes of the show, but we do have time to run Pool Hall Blues. Let's roll this track, Bob. Thank you.
Cause I just love to play pool. It ain't no way for a lady to act. You know where you can find me every night after dark. Cause you're brought up proper.
Priceless. Priceless. What came over you? What an interesting, interesting track. Do you regularly play pool still?
I played last weekend for the first time in years. I had a ball. I didn't play very good, but I looked good doing it.
So important.
Like I play golf, but that. I look like I play much better than I do. I have a good-looking swing, but I score miserably.
When I ran the list of pool playing, disco singing, stage acting, someone added in chat Olive Curran.
Yeah, you betcha.
Olive
Curran. I've got a crop this year on my tree. Well, I'm really excited.
Well, I'm interested to hear about that. We have just a couple of minutes. Tell us about what curing olives is about. I just assumed you picked the olives and dropped them in a jar with a pimento. What's the deal?
No, they are so bitter when they come off the tree. It's amazing that anyone ever thought they were edible because they're incredibly bitter. So I don't like to use lye, which they use to cure green olives, which are unripe olives. So I like to just use natural curing with water. So I wait till they're ripe, wait till they're black. You take them out, you put a little slit in each one, and you immerse them in 5-gallon buckets of water. Change the water every day. It comes out very dark purple. You do that for about 3 weeks, and then you, or is it 5 days? I have to look at my recipe now. I can't even remember. But that's bleaching the bitterness out, and then they kind of taste like nothing. And then you put them into jars and with brine and vinegar and salt and spices like garlic and hot peppers and lemon and thyme and things, and seal them up and vacuum seal them so they won't spoil. And they are just killer. They're really, really good.
Well, it sounds absolutely wonderful. Do you sell these things, or do you use them in your own cooking? Does Glenn have any?
No, because I haven't had a crop in years, and I haven't made them for about 4 years. He'll get some when I make them, but I'm excited because this is about the first crop I'm going to have in a long time, and I'm all out of the ones that I had put up, in the cupboard. They they've run out, and I just give them away to friends, and I use them myself. I don't sell them.
Wonderful. Well, you're quite an interesting person, Lucy. I knew when I read the materials about you that you're a most unusual person, and indeed you are. And again, the Lucy, I'm home. Who thought of that, by the way? We have just a second. Who thought of that?
You did. Well, I thought of it, and it was right in the beginning when very few people had domain names, and I just matched that up. I thought that.
Well done. Well done. Well, we're going to have to.
Thought of it.
Wonderful. I've mentioned it. I hope you get some hits. We've mentioned it a lot tonight. You've been a wonderful guest. I am going to have to wrap because we have additional live programming coming up after Strictly Confidential. Lucy, thank you so much for being with us, and we'd love to have you back again, okay?
Thank you, Peter. It was delightful. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. Good evening to you, Lucy. And thank you, Glenn, for a remarkable guest, indeed. You just never cease to amaze us. Glenn Rivera is a veritable disco magnet. And we appreciate him very much and the work he does keeping us with some of those interesting music guests on the planet. And I want to tell you that there is additional live programming coming up. John Fox and myself and Bob Kincaid will be doing a horn section in just a few minutes, starting at 11 p.m. Eastern Time. And there will be an All Foxed Up featuring John Fox from Australia at midnight Eastern Time. And thank you for joining us this evening. You've been great fun, and so has the guest.